you cannot have human rights unless you have an adequate view of human nature.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. Sometimes we as parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, and even friends find that we have to explain some very difficult concepts to children, especially in our current cultural climate. Finding a balance between helping children understand God's truth and then how it applies to our everyday lives can really be quite difficult. Our guest is renowned Christian apologist Nancy Piercy, a professor and scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University. Nancy's newest book, Love Thy Body, Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, provides valuable insights into some of today's biggest hot-button cultural topics. Nancy, welcome back to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, young people these days, Nancy, seem to have an innate appreciation for justice and compassion, which is great. But you warn that today's secularism can really destroy the basis for true compassion and true human rights. How do we balance the quest for justice and compassion without inadvertently tearing down or undermining the fundamental rights and dignity that we all should experience as members of the human race?
Right. I think what we need to help our children understand is that you cannot have human rights unless you have an adequate view of human nature. In my book, Love Thy Body, I quote an internationally best-selling book. It's called Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. And he basically argues that if you're an atheist, if you're an evolutionist, you do not have a basis for human rights. And he himself, by the way, is an atheist. And so he's arguing that there is no basis for human rights. For example, in the Declaration of Independence, we Americans say that human rights are endowed by the Creator and that all humans are created equal. Well, in this internationally best-selling book, he says that's not true. If you're an evolutionist, you realize that natural selection works on variations among living things. And so he says created equal should be retranslated into evolved differently. And of course, in a materialist worldview, there's no creator to endow humans with rights. There's only, as this book puts it, the blind evolutionary process devoid of any purpose. And so phrase by phrase, this book dismantles the claims in the Declaration of Independence. It says that humans are merely biological organisms driven by the instinct to seek pleasure, and that the concept of equal rights is nothing but a Christian myth. So we have to realize that when ideas like this permeate down through the public mind, human rights will be increasingly seen as nothing but a Christian myth. And then, of course, who's going to bother to protect them? So politics is downstream from culture. To be effective, we really cannot avoid the larger philosophical questions. What does it mean to be human? Do we have an adequate concept of human nature to guarantee human rights?
I know that as we kind of apply this to our daily lives, we often hear a common objection to having standard. Why not just let people live the lives that they want to live as long as they're not hurting anyone else? Isn't that okay? Nancy, how can we help our children understand that God's design for us is really to live in community with others, and that as we live in that community, the things that we do and the things that they do will inevitably influence and affect other people?
Right, and they affect us because people change the laws to reflect their viewpoint. And when the laws are changed, that affects everyone. So a free society is possible only if it recognizes some rights as pre-political. That means they're based on something prior to the state. The state does not create them. It merely recognizes them. So take, for example, the right to life, the issue of abortion. The right to life used to be a pre-political right. It was something you had just because you're a member of the human race. But the only way the state could legalize abortion was to rule that some humans are not legal persons. And that means the state has claimed the authority to decide which humans have a right to live, not based on biology, not based on the fact that they're human, but based only on its own legal fiat. This is a huge power grab by the state. It's an enormous increase in state power. Or to take another issue that's in the news a lot today, marriage used to be a pre-political right. It was based on the fact that humans are a sexually reproducing species, and the state merely recognized it. But the only way the state could treat same-sex couples the same as opposite-sex couples was to redefine marriage as a purely emotional commitment, which is what the Supreme Court did in its Obergefell decision when it legalized marriage, same-sex marriage. The trouble is we have a lot of different emotional commitments. So the state has claimed the authority to define which relationships qualify as marriage based not on biology, but only on its own say-so. And if you read same-sex advocates, they say the next step will be parenthood. Up until now, who counts as a child's parents was based on biological relationship. But in a same-sex couple, at least one parent is not biologically related to any child that they have. So the only way the state can treat same-sex parents the same as opposite-sex parents is to redefine parenthood without regard to biology. So you will be your child's parents only by permission of the state. And this really is the background to all the transgender laws as well, which are really on the front burner today. It used to be that gender followed metaphysically on your biological sex. But the only way the law can treat a trans woman, that means someone born male, the same as a biological woman, is to say biology is irrelevant. And so that's why you have public schools now enforcing policies telling teachers which pronouns they must use without regard for the student's biological sex. So you see, in every one of these cases, biology or natural realities are being dismissed, and the state is substituting its own legal definition. And of course, what the state gives, the state can take away. And that's why human rights are no longer inalienable. A secular ethic is setting us up for control by an all-power political state.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Well, that's so important. And I know, Nancy, that you've echoed Pope John Paul II in criticizing both the hookup culture and our increasingly sexualized media for showing too little rather than too much of the human person. How can we help our children develop a more discerning and respectful eye for both media and relationships?
Yeah, again, I think we have to help young people recognize the underlying worldview. You know, we have to help them think critically. And Pope John Paul II was great at showing the denigration of the body and biology that is central to the secular ethic. I mean, let's take another hot button issue like homosexuality. Many people are stunned by how quickly same-sex marriage won the day. You know, how did that happen? And the reason is it's just the logical implication of these same secular ideas. So, think of it this way. No one really denies that on the level of biology, physiology, chromosomes, and anatomy, males and females are counterparts to one another. That's how the human sexual and reproductive system is designed. So to embrace a same-sex identity is implicitly to contradict that design. It's to say, why should the structure of my body inform my identity? Why should my biological sex have any say in my moral choices? Again, you see that this is a profoundly disrespectful view of the body. And there's an outspoken lesbian named Camille Paglia. And this is exactly how she defends homosexuality. Basically, she says the body is a product of purposeless random forces, and therefore it has no intrinsic purpose. And the mind is free to use the body any way it wants. Here's how she puts it in one of her essays. She says, I realize that nature has made us male and female. Okay, humans are a sexually reproducing species. And then she asks, why not defy nature? After all, fate, not God, has given us this flesh. We have absolute claim to our bodies and may do with them as we see fit. So if our bodies are merely products of undirected material forces, then they convey no moral message, they give no clue to our identity, they have no inherent purpose that we're obligated to respect. And this is what we have to help people to see. It goes back to a very low and demeaning view of the body. And the alternative, of course, is to say, yes, the body does have meaning and purpose. And this, the technical term there is a teleological view. It's come from the Greek word telos, which just means purpose. And what that means is that nature exhibits a design, a plan, an order, a purpose. And when we live in harmony with that design, when we live in tune with our bodies, we experience greater human flourishing, as the ethicists put it, which just means you're happier and healthier.
Right.
Because morality is not merely arbitrary rules. It's not just social convention. It expresses the teleology, the purpose of what it means to be fully human. So this is how we need to get our young people to think in terms of these big questions. You know, what kind of cosmos do we live in? Is it a cosmos of atoms bumping around by random forces? Or is it a cosmos ordered by a purpose, which provides rational grounds for our moral decisions?
Well, Nancy, I once heard a pastor say that the demographic shift that we've been seeing in younger generations who are simultaneously more pro-life and at the same time more permissive about sexuality is all rooted in a sense of compassion. Compassion rightly placed in loving and protecting the unborn, but compassion wrongly placed in wanting to support an individual's sense of identity, regardless of what that identity might be. So do you agree with his assessment? And how do we help young people sort of bridge that disconnect between a sense of real compassion that we would probably agree with on one hand, but compassion that leads them astray on the other hand?
Right. Well, it is true that surveys find millennials are the most pro-life generation today. They're much more pro-life than their baby boomer parents, and that's very heartening. They've grown up seeing ultrasound pictures posted on their refrigerator, and they are much more aware that the human being is human from the beginning, from conception. Now, it's true that they didn't turn around and say, well, we should be compassionate and not judge people for their choices. And again, the answer to that is to help them understand the underlying worldview. Like, we haven't talked yet about the hookup culture, but the hookup culture also rests on a very low view of the human person. It's the assumption that sex can be purely physical, cut off from the whole person, without any hint of love or emotional attachment. And so what are they saying? They're essentially saying the human being is nothing but a physical organism driven by physical impulses. Rolling Stone magazine quoted a young man who said, "Sex is just a piece of body touching another piece of body. It is existentially meaningless." What kind of a philosophy is that for young people? No wonder it's creating a trail of wounded people. They're trying to live out a worldview that does not fit who they truly are. And so genuine compassion in a case like that is to help people see that they're living out a worldview that is destructive.
Well, Nancy, there's so much that we could talk about in a continuation of this discussion, but unfortunately we're out of time today. But I know that we have listeners out there who are very interested in learning more and understanding more, especially of the insights that you have so graciously provided in your new book, Love Thy Body, Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. Where can our listeners go to get a copy of this new book?
Well, they could certainly buy it on any of the online bookstores like Amazon and ChristianBook.com. The publisher is Baker, so you can also get it from your local Christian bookstores.
Great. And again, the title of that book is Love Thy Body, Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality by Nancy Piercy. And with that, Nancy, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters today and for being a light for truth in an increasingly confused and secular world.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.